Namaskaram. Today, what one friend suggested to me, but since it's Christmas, I could talk about the significance that Bhagavan often referred to the biblical saying where God said to Moses, when Moses asked God his name, God replied, "I am that I am. Say that I am has sent you." So a friend suggested that I talk about that. But that is in the Old Testament. Before starting there, since it's Christmas Day, I thought I'd talk a little bit about Christ and the name I am. One of the sayings of Christ that Bhagavan often used to point out was from the Gospel of John, "Before Abraham was, I am." That's the usual translation. I think actually a more precise translation is, "Before Abraham was born, I am." As Bhagavan pointed out, that is one particularly significant thing about that, is Jesus didn't say, "Before Abraham was, I was." He said, "Before Abraham was, I am." In other words, he's referring to the eternal I am. That is that I am which is beyond time, for which there is no past, present, or future, just the eternal, ever-present I am. That is one significant. And that, incidentally, Bhagavan pointed that out. That was also pointed out by some of the early church fathers, that is, some of the early saints of Christianity. They also attached importance to the fact that that was in the present tense. The other significance is that in the Old Testament, I am is the name of God, but I'll talk more about that after a little while. That is one of the most significant I am statements of Jesus, but there are many such statements, particularly in the Gospel of John, but also in some of the other Gospels. Many of the I am sayings of Jesus are statements such as, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am a good shepherd. I am the bread of life." Such statements in which that is what they call the predicate statement, where he's saying something about, "I am this" or "I am that." Most of those are considered as very significant because for people who know the Bible well, which I don't, most of the things that Jesus referred to, such as the way, the truth, the life, the good shepherd, all these were all references to statements about the divine nature in the Old Testament. So these are all regarded as statements of Christ's divinity, of the fact that he was God. But there are also many statements in the Bible where he just says, "I am." These are called the absolute I am, rather than the predicate I am. Obviously, this one, "Before Abraham was, I am," this is probably the most significant one. But in many other contexts where he used "I am," and incidentally, the Gospels were written in Greek, and Jesus probably spoke sometimes in Greek and sometimes in Aramaic, but it was all recorded in Greek in the Gospels. In Greek, the word for "I am" is simply "Amy." "Amy" means "am," but it's not necessary to add the pronoun "I" before it, because it's understood. This is the case in many languages, but it is not necessary to add a pronoun before a verb, because the pronoun is implied by the verb ending. For example, the well-known Latin saying of Descartes, "Cogito ergo sum," "I think, therefore I am." There's no the pronoun "I" is not actually there. Cogito, means I think, but it's not, he doesn't say ego cogito, he just says cogito, because the I is implied there. Likewise with sum. Sum means am, but it implies I am. So this is the case in many languages. In Tamil, the word for am is irikarain. And Bhagavan often used to refer to the word irikarain. Sometimes when he wanted to give more emphasis to it, he would say nan irikarain. That is, he would specify the pronoun nan. That gives adds more emphasis. But even if you simply say irikarain, the I is implied there. So that is the case in many languages, in, not only in Tamil, in Sanskrit, in Latin, in Greek, in so many languages. Also, I think in Hebrew. So in most languages, it's not necessary to state the pronoun because the form of the verb indicates what the pronoun is. In Greek, it would have been sufficient just to say Amy. Amy means I am. But in most of the I am statements of Jesus in the Gospels, in most cases, not all cases, but in most cases, it is ego Amy. Ego Amy is, ego means I and Amy means am. The fact that ego is specified there, that is, adds emphasis to it. So in the case of before Abraham was I am, the word for I am is not just Amy, it's ego Amy. So it's emphasizing that I am. So there are many places where Jesus says I am without any further predicate. Am is itself a predicate, but there's no further predicate added to that. But it's often lost in the English translations. For example, when Jesus was walking on the water and approaching his disciples in the boat, they were afraid seeing him walking on water. He assured them, saying, "Don't be afraid, I am, ego Amy." Is what he said, but that's usually translated as, "Do not be afraid, it is I." That is how it's translated in most modern translations, both in English and also the equivalent in other languages. That is, they interpret the I am as meaning it is I. In other contexts, for example, when before the crucifixion, when the Roman guards came to arrest Jesus, I think, if I remember correctly, he asked them, "Who are you looking for?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." And he replied, "Ego Amy, I am." But it's usually translated as, "I am he." That is, according to the context, they interpret the I am. But if we take what is actually there in the original is simply I am. And that has great significance. In the eyes of the Jews, that was blasphemy. For example, when Jesus said, "Before Abraham was I am," in the very next verse, it says, they took up stones to stone him. Why did they take up stones? Because of blasphemy. In another place, a couple of chapters later, when he said, "I and my Father are one," they again took up stones to stone him. And at that time, he asked them, why do you, "I have done many wonders," meaning I've done many miracles. "For which miracle is it you're stoning me?" And they said, "It is not for the, or not wonders, I think it's good work. I've done many good works. For which of the good works is it that you stone me?" And they said, "It is not for your good works. It is because you claim to be one with God, because you claim your divinity." So whenever he said, "I am," that angered them, because for them, that was blasphemy. Why was it blasphemy? Because I am was the name of God. In the biblical tradition, I am was the name of God. That dates back to the time of Moses, when Moses was sent by God to go and lead his people out of Israel. God spoke to Moses. God, in the form of a burning bush, spoke to Moses. So when he told Moses to go and tell Pharaoh that he was to take his people out of Israel, and he was to lead, tell the people of Israel also, he said, who shall I say has sent me? What name shall I give? If they ask me your name, what name shall I give? And God replies, I am that I am. This is the statement that Bhagavan referred to most frequently, the biblical statement that Bhagavan referred to most frequently. The words I am that I am, the actual words in the original, the first word means am. I is implied there. The second word is a relative participle or a relative particle. So it's usually translated as that or who or what. So I am what I am, or I am who I am. And the third word is again am. And in the next sentence, God says, say that I am has sent me. So he's clearly indicating that his true name is I am. And that is that's not the only place. There are many places in the Bible where God is referred to as I am. So that is the first and foremost name of God, according to the Bible, and also according to Bhagavan. Bhagavan often said, of all the names of God, the first and the foremost is I, or I am. Bhagavan said, even Om is secondary. The first name is the name I am. So it's a hugely significant name. The fact that it's significant was recognized by the ancient Jews. It's also recognized by modern theologians and biblical scholars. In fact, throughout all time, it's been recognized. But they recognize that it's significant, but what the significance is, they don't fully understand. The earliest the early books of the Bible, the Old Testament, were originally written in Hebrew. Probably the earliest translation of the Bible was about 250 years before Christ. The Old Testament was translated into Greek. And I think that translation is called the Septuagint or something. I'm not quite sure how it's pronounced, but it's called that because it was said to be translated by 70 scholars or 70 wise people, people who were considered holy people. So that's a highly regarded translation. And the form of the Bible that Christ was probably most familiar with was that Greek translation. Most people in Christ's time were not familiar with the ancient Hebrew. They were familiar with the local language, which was Aramaic, and Greek, which was the sort of the regional language. The whole of region of the Mediterranean for hundreds of years had been strongly influenced by Greek culture, and the main language between all the different cultures that lived in that region was Greek. So Christ would have known Greek, and he would have been most familiar with the Old Testament in the Greek version. He may also have understood some Hebrew and would have known about the Hebrew Bible, and he probably knew what the original of I am was at, that I am was in the Hebrew, but he would have been more familiar with the Greek version. So in the Greek translation, I am that I am was translated as something that means, again, the I am portion was translated as ego eimi, and I think it's ego eimi ho on or something. I don't know Greek at all, but ho on is variously translated. Often it's translated as I am the being. Or it's also translated as I am the one who is, or I am he who is. That's the different translation. I think probably the closest, the most accurate translation is I am the one who is. So whereas the original Hebrew, it was I am that I am, in the Greek it became I am who is. I am the one who is. I think that obviously the scholars who translated, who did that Greek translation, they knew the meaning of the original. But to bring out the, in an attempt to make the meaning clearer, they translated it as I am the one who is. I am the one who is implied that God is the ultimate being. He is the ultimate existence. He is the existence on which the existence of all other things depend. So he's the pure existence, the original existence, and all other things derive their existence from him. So in other words, he is the ultimate substance. That was the theology behind their translation. So they thought the most meaningful translation of I am that I am was I am the one who is. The one who is very similar to the Tamil term Bhagavan often used, Ulladu. Ulladu means what is, or that which is. So it's that's a very nice term to describe the existence. However, one thing that is lost in that Greek translation, when it becomes I am the one who is, or I am he who is, the first person becomes a second person. That is, the beauty of the original Hebrew, God is saying, I am, I'm nothing other than I, in other words. There's a difference, there's a subtle difference between I am and the one who is. Of course, I am is the one who is, but as soon as we talk about the one who is, we seem to be referring to a third person, whereas I am refers to the first person. So God is not just the being out there. He is the being within us. He is that which is shining in our heart as I. This is the significance that Bhagavan attached to this. And often when Bhagavan referred to this biblical saying, I am that I am, incidentally, Bhagavan often said, this is the greatest of the Mahavakyas. The Mahavakyas are the Vedic sayings but reveal our true identity. That is, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. I am Atma Brahma. This self, this very self is Brahman. Prajnanam Brahman, this awareness that I am, this is Brahman. Or Tattvamasi, you are that. So these are the Mahavakyas of the Vedas. They are called Mahavakyas because they are revealing what our real identity is. Who am I? I am Brahman. So it is revealing what our true I. Now we take ourselves to be a small person, but what we actually are is not this person, but it is Brahman. That is the significance of the Mahavakyas of the Vedas. But where is the Mahavakyas of the Vedas? It is, we start off with an idea of Brahman, of God, or some greater being, something far greater than ourselves, but we initially we take to be something other than ourselves, because after all, how can I be God? I'm a small, little, insignificant creature born a few years ago, going to die in a few years hence. I'm limited by time. I'm limited in space. I'm limited in so many ways. So how can I be God? So God seems to us to be another. God or Brahman seems to us to be another. So the aim of the Mahavakyas is to point out to us that what we take to be something other than ourselves, the God or the Brahman, what we take to be something other than ourselves is actually nothing other than ourselves. So starting from that belief that there's some other, we are told that that which we take to be other is not actually other, it is ourselves. So the purpose of the Mahavakyas is to turn our attention back to ourselves. But once we have understood that Brahman is I, we don't have to concern, the word Brahman loses its, that is, it no longer, it, we need not dwell on the idea of Brahman. Once we understand that Brahman is I, we don't have to meditate on some idea of Brahman. We can meditate only on I. That is the aim of the Mahavakya. That is why Bhagavan says in verse 32 of Ulladunapadu, and I'll paraphrase it to bring out the meaning. It's not the exact meaning, but Bhagavan says, when the Vedas say you are that, the implication of what Bhagavan says is when the Vedas say you are that, our response should be to say, oh, if I am that, then who am I? That is the reason they say you are that, is to turn our attention away from the idea of Brahman as something other than ourselves, to turn our attention back to ourselves. But what exactly Bhagavan says in verse 32 is, I'll read the whole verse because it's a very important verse. Bhagavan says, when the Vedas proclaim that is you, instead of oneself being knowing oneself as what? That implies instead of one knowing and being what one actually is by investigating what am I, thinking I am that, not this, is due to non-existence of strength, because that alone is always seated as oneself. So when the Vedas say you are that, the purpose of the Mahavakyas is to turn our attention away from Brahman as a mere idea, something other than ourselves, to make us understand Brahman is nothing but that which is shining in you as I. So that is the aim of the Mahavakyas. Bhagavan often said the greatest of all the Mahavakyas is the Mahavakya in the Bible, I am that I am. Why did Bhagavan consider that a greater Mahavakya than the Mahavakyas that say, I am Brahman? Because so long as we think I am Brahman, we seem to be starting with two things. There's I am and there's Brahman. And we're saying these two things are not two things, they're only one. But still, so long as we are thinking of I am Brahman, we are identifying ourselves with an idea. We've got a certain idea of Brahman is the greatest. Brahman means that which is the expansive, that which is the wholeness, the fullness, the totality of all that is, or whatever. We've got some idea of Brahman, or we've got some idea of God. God is all-powerful, all-knowing, all-loving, everything. We've got certain ideas of God. And it is said, you are that, or Aham Brahmasmi, or Shivaham, or Soham, we are identifying ourselves with a certain idea that we have about God or about Brahman. Whereas in I am that I am, we are identifying ourselves with nothing other than ourselves. This is why when Bhagavan talked about I am that I am, he explained it in Tamil as Nan Nan, or in Sanskrit as aham aham. These two terms, which mean the same, aham aham or nan nan, they both mean I am I. These are terms that Bhagavan often used in many, many of his verses. He uses this term, either aham aham or nan nan. Even in Tamil, he often used aham aham because the meaning of aham is understood in Tamil, but it means only I. But unfortunately, in the English translations, this aham aham or nan nan is frequently translated as I hyphen I. This is missing the point. That is in Tamil and Sanskrit and many languages. But it is not necessary to include the copula. The copula means the verb to be. If you're in a statement such as, I am this. For instance, in Tamil, to say I am this, it's simply nan idu. That's I, this. The am is understood there. Or in who am I? Nan a or nan ya. It's simply I who. The am is understood there. Likewise, in nan nan, the I is understood. So Bhagavan often contrasted our experience as ego, which is I am this. I am this body, in other words, with our real nature, which is just I am I. In other words, the significance of the term nan nan or aham aham, I am I, is that is awareness of ourself as ourself alone. Awareness of ourself is nothing other than ourself. I am I and nothing other than I. So because Bhagavan, that is the... What Bhagavan took the I am that I am, the biblical saying, he took it to mean that, but I am only I am nothing other than I. He said that is the greatest of the Mahavakyas, because the truth is ekam eva advitiyam, one only without a second. There is nothing other than I. What actually exists is only I. So who am I? I am only I. I'm nothing other than I. So Bhagavan was always trying to draw our attention back to I and to make us aware of the fact that by turning our attention towards ourselves, when we turn our attention towards ourselves, to the extent to which we attend to ourselves, we are thereby withdrawing our attention from all other things. So if we attend to ourselves keenly enough, the ultimate experience will be, I am I. I am nothing other than I, because nothing other than I actually exists. So there's a huge significance in this term, aham aham, or nan nan, I am I, in Bhagavan's teachings. And because he saw the same implication in that biblical saying, he said that is the greatest of the Mahavakyas. That means the greatest of the Mahavakyas is simply I am I. That is what we actually are. We can, when we say I am Brahman, of course that's true, but it's not such a perfect way of expressing it, because when you say I am Brahman, you've got two things. You've got I am and you've got Brahman, and you're saying these two things are one. But still, if we really understand that Brahman is I, then the word Brahman becomes superfluous. It becomes redundant. Why do we need the word Brahman when it's far more natural to refer to ourselves as I than to refer to ourselves as Brahman? So the natural name for ourselves is I. Therefore, what we actually are is only I am I. This is why Bhagavan often said that the first name of God, the first and foremost name of God, is only I am. So, what this biblical name of God, I am, is a hugely significant name. They knew it, the Hebrews and the Hebrew people and their success, I mean, after them, the Christian people, everyone knows this I am is a hugely significant name, but what is the significance of it is missed, or by most people. Most people don't understand that is, there is only one I am. That which is shining in each one of us as I, that is the one only without a second. There are no two I ams. There seem to be many I's because we now identify ourselves as I am this body. So this body is one I, your body is another I, each person's body, there are so many I's. If I am this body, then there are many I's. But when we know that what I actually am is only I am I, then there's only one I. There cannot be, because differences arise only when we limit ourselves as a form. When we don't limit ourselves as a form, when we remain just as we actually are, as that fundamental awareness I am, then there is no difference. So there's no difference between you and me or anyone else. The difference is only as far as the body is concerned. If we remove all the adjuncts, what remains is that pure awareness I am, which is the infinite whole, which is one only without a second, ekam eva advaitiyam. So there is only one I. So that what God revealed to Moses in the Bible, Bhagavan considered that to be hugely significant. And Bhagavan made it clear to us, what is the significance of that? Everyone knew it was significant, but what is the significance? That is why I say, in the Greek translation, the ancient Greek translation, where they translated "I am that I am what I am" as "I am the one who is," it is conveying the meaning, but it's not. It's missing out this important thing. But the one who is nothing other than I. There's no. It's the one who is Ulladu. Even Ulladu seems to be third person. Ulladu means what is. It seems to be a third person, but actually Bhagavan makes it clear it is only the first person. What actually exists, as he says in the seventh paragraph of Nana, Yathatamai Ulladu Atmasvarupa Mandre, what actually exists is only the real nature of ourself. In other words, it's only I am. Nothing other than I am actually exists. What is real is only I am. As he says in the 13th verse of Uludunaptu, Jnanamam Tane Me, oneself who is awareness alone is real. So this is the significance of the biblical name of God, I am. This is the significance of Christ so often using that name, I am, and why they took it as blasphemy. But it is not blasphemy. What Christ is saying, it is true of Christ, it is true of every one of us. We are all nothing other than that I am, that one I am, but alone actually exists. So as Bhagavan often said, there has to be at least a certain amount of truth in every religion. No religion will survive for long if it doesn't contain an element of truth. And the ultimate truth is, I am only I. What is real is only I. There is nothing other than I. That is the ultimate truth. So if a religion fails to point to, at least indirectly point out this truth, it will die out because it has no spiritual merit. The only spiritual merit is in any religion is to the extent to which it turns our attention back towards ourselves, because the truth cannot be out there. Everything out there is objects. How can the truth be an object? How can the reality be an object? The reality is not an object. It is not even the subject, but it is the reality of the subject. The subject is the adjunct mixed awareness. I am this, I am this body, I am Michael, I am so-and-so, I am whoever. That is the subject, that is ego. But that same ego, bereft of adjuncts, is the pure being. It is the one who is, as they say in the Greek translation, and that one who is only I am. So I am alone is real. So who am I? I am I. That is Bhagavan's teachings. That is the essence of what Bhagavan taught us. And that is indirectly implied in so many different forms in other religions. But the clearest, simplest, and most unambiguous expression of this is to be found in Bhagavan's teachings. Bhagavan's teachings are the very essence of Advaita Vedanta. And Advaita is the very essence of Vedanta. And Vedanta is the very essence of the Vedas and the very essence of all religions. So ultimately, all religions and all philosophies are useful to the extent to which they turn our attention back to I. When our attention is turned back to I, we can leave behind all philosophies, all religions, all sciences, all learning. Because all that we have to know is, who am I? If we know who am I, then we will know I am only I. Nan nan, aham aham. Om namo bhagavate sri arana chalaramanaya.